Welcome back to the featured photographer interview for April 2021. And just want you to know that we're kicking off our ninth year of Street Photography Magazine this month. So I'm excited about that. If you want to send us a birthday cake, we'll take it. And also with me, per usual, is Ashley Refo, our editor. So
hi, Bob.
Ashley, how are you? How you been?
Doing good. Excited to continue our Year of Women interviews.
Our Year of Women Street Photographers. Yeah. That's right. We are continuing it with our fourth guest, who happens to be Virginia Hines. Virginia has written a number of articles for the magazine. She works in Silicon Valley, used to be in publishing, was photojournalist, reporter, and just excellent writer, storyteller. And so, Virginia, welcome. Thank you for being with us and sharing your work with us this month.
Well, terrific. Thank you so much, Bob and Ashley. This is really exciting to get to meet you all and chat about photography.
Yeah. Everybody, you've got a few hours. We could talk about photography all day long, but we're only going for about an hour. Sorry. So, Virginia, before we get into the photography stuff, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I live in San Francisco near the Financial District. Coincidentally, I'm right across the street from where Dorothea Lange's old studio was. I think about my photography career, it's kind of happened in reverse. When I was a teenager, I was photographing for a daily newspaper. After that, I studied photography. And finally, now I've ended up as an amateur. But my parents were newspaper editors. And they, one day when I was in high school, they just handed me an old Pentax SLR with one of those big Honeywell flashes and said, you know, go out and take these pictures for us. They were all what you might consider idiot-proof pictures, the giant check presentations, the people who grew unusual vegetables in their backyard, ladies' teas, things like that. But it was enough to kind of get me started in photography. And I was, by the time I got to college, I was very interested in it. I went to Rice University in Houston and studied with Jeff Winningham. During that period, I was mainly using a 4x5 view camera. That camera is still sitting in the back of the closet. But, then my family kind of went through a lot of chaos during that time, and I wasn't able to pursue photography the way I'd hoped. I really needed to get more practical. So for a couple of decades, I still bought photography books and went to galleries and museums, but I wasn't actually shooting seriously. A couple of things did finally bring me back to photography. The first one was I started traveling frequently to Asia, particularly to China and India. I love both those countries, and I was really motivated to start capturing some of the moments that I was experiencing. Then the second, the technology evolved, and digital photography is so much simpler and more accessible, particularly to people who have a day job. You don't need to have a dark room. You can just deal with your images, sitting at home looking at your computer. So, and it's really only in the last 10 years that the image quality has been on par, with the professional film camera. So I was just very fortunate that there was kind of a happy confluence of travel and technology that opened the door again for me into something that gave me a lot of pleasure. I want to also mention that, an important step as I've kind of gotten back into photography has been taking workshops from photographers that I've admired, including Bruce Gilden and Alex and Rebecca Webb, and particularly Harvey Stein, who's really become a good friend. And I think of him as my photography mentor. Harvey's a fantastic teacher, and I've just learned so much from him. And I just find it very, very helpful to study with these photographers that I admire, and not just to see their pictures, because you can do that if you go to a gallery or look at a book, but in order to just see how they think, how they talk about things, how they approach people, how they work in the street. That's, for me, that's where the real learning is. It's just observation and trying to understand why they think about things they do. I may or may not want to copy them, but they have a lot of experience, and I really want to learn what I can from that.
That sounds like a great approach to take to workshops instead of thinking, what do I want to gain from going to this workshop? To really choose the workshop based on who's teaching it, someone you admire, and see what you can learn from that person as an individual, how they think. I think that's a really nice gem to take away from what you've said.
Yeah, that's been very, very useful to me. I've learned so much from these people who have, you know, just years and years of experience. And that's the part of the workshops I enjoy the most, just the observation.
Yeah, so you said you took a workshop from Bruce Gilden, which many people don't take that workshop until they've been at it for a while, from what I understand. How was it? How was the experience?
Well, it's funny you asked that, because Bruce's workshop was the very first one I took. I sort of have a tendency to dive in the deep end, and I definitely went in over my head on that one, as I think was the case with almost everybody there at the workshop. So, you know, Bruce tells it like it is. And what my takeaway at the end was a good sense of how committed and how, perfectionist you need to be to really take pictures at the top level. I think he doesn't pull any punches. I don't think he liked any photo that anybody in the entire workshop made. But, you know, he doesn't just flatter you. He doesn't say something nice to be encouraging. He just tells you, I won't use his exact language, but he says your photograph is no good. And you realize what it takes to come up to his level, and all of the commitment and the hard work and the practice and the and putting yourself in it. You know, I think a lot of people think you can kind of get by with some clever editing tricks or doing something sort of facile and simple. And I'll tell you, Bruce really calls you out if you try to get away with that. And that was very helpful to me, because you see so much of this sort of facile type work on Instagram. It's like, who's to know? Maybe that is photography. But then you take a course from somebody like him, and you know, oh, that doesn't even, that doesn't even open the first door.
So, having been through the experience, what are you doing differently now that you didn't do before you took the workshop? Or what have you stopped doing as a result of learning from Bruce?
I think the first thing I've stopped doing is, trying to grab pictures of people without them knowing. And in a way, I mean, he calls those kind of like cowardly. It's not exactly his word, but he's essentially like, that's a very cowardly approach. If you're going to take their picture, I want them to know I'm making their picture, and to capture as part of that photograph that interaction of the two personalities. So, that kind of drive-by shooting that some people do, trying to kind of catch things off to the side, or again and again, he's like, straight, make the picture straight. So people would show him a picture they had made kind of at an angle so the person wouldn't see them grabbing it. And, he was like, straight on, stand straight in front of them, get 2 feet away from them. So it's just really that uncompromising focus on getting getting the photo that you want, and knowing what you want in advance, and not taking any shortcuts, not making any compromises.
Sounds like good practice in stepping out of your comfort zone to make the kind of images you really want to make.
Exactly. And that was one of my takeaways from the workshop, was get out of your comfort zone. And after that workshop, I didn't make any photos for about a month, and I was just kind of traumatized. And I spent that month thinking about what I really wanted to do and how I could make photos, the photos that I wanted, and kind of, psych myself up to do it. So after that, I think I started making much better photos, and I really value the learning that I came away with from that workshop. But it was not a touchy feely experience.
Yeah, would you do it again?
I might, but I might need it one more time.
A little bit of tough love, huh?
Exactly. You get up to a point. You know what I think would be good is you get to a point where you're feeling self-satisfied, and then take another workshop from Bruce Gilden to kind of have him. take you down a peg.
Bring you back down to earth.
Yeah, exactly.
What's that saying you say, Ashley?
It's worth the cry.
It's worth a cry. Worth a cry, yes. I've heard it on more than one occasion, people have left his workshops crying. So
there were some people that dropped out of this one, two retired couples who were hoping for a little more praise for their HDR vacation photos from Cuba.
Yeah, I don't think that would fly with him.
No,
HDR. It didn't. Kind of doubt it.
But their friends love those photos, you know, so they were sure he would do.
So I see you mainly shoot with Leica. Is that a result of taking workshop from Bruce or from Harvey Stein, who also shoots with Leica?
That did start with Bruce, sort of indirectly. And the Leica, you know, I know it's not for everybody. It's kind of a tough camera to get really comfortable with. But in my period of reflection after I took Bruce's workshop, soon after that, I was in my mom's hometown in Tennessee, and there was some small town professional wrestling happening there. These are basically the has-beens and the wannabes of the professional wrestling world, who, you know, have a very blue collar audience in front of in sort of a makeshift arena. And I was using my first camera after I started getting serious again was just a, you know, a name brand, a Japanese digital camera with all the bells and whistles. And initially I was very happy with it, but in this project, it kept autofocusing on the ropes. It kept, there was the electronic viewfinder lag, and it's, you know, the wrestling is like super fast moving. So you just have to, you can't have that moment of hesitation, even if it's just a fraction of a second. So I was missing more shots than I was getting. I was very frustrated with that. And I knew that Bruce and many other photographers that I admired use the Leica. And so about that time, Leica had a good deal on a bundle, a camera and a lens bundle. And I just decided to go for it and give it a try. It took me about 3 months to really get comfortable with the rangefinder, and I continued to use the other camera for maybe about 6 months, use them together. But eventually I got very comfortable with the Leica to the point that I just didn't like the other camera anymore. It was just too automatic. I remember I started with a 4x5 view camera, so I sort of have a bias to the very manual approach, and I felt that the Leica, it just sort of, it resonated with me and gave me the control that I wanted, you know, at the same time having really excellent image quality with the, you know, with the full frame sensor. And then, of course, the amazing Leica lenses that, you know, you have a choice of such great lenses.
Do you primarily zone focus on the street with it?
I do. I can focus fine with the rangefinder, but I don't tend to use it unless I'm doing something really specific, like a portrait or something. I like to set it and forget it with the zone focusing.
Nice and simple. Of course.
Exactly.
Of course, with the basically any Japanese camera that has all the stuff on it, can't you just shoot manual with it and do the same thing?
You probably can. The one that I had did not have the zone focus. I'm sure some of them do, or I know too that you can use Leica lenses. You know, the cameras, I guess this is just my bias. The camera, you know, just wants to control things. It's kind of built that way. It's kind of built with the assumption that the photographer wants the camera to make some decisions. Mm-hmm. And I'm just stubborn enough that I was like, no, stop it. And so
you're going to make them all.
Yeah. So
that's what you are. You're a control freak.
Yeah. I am. I think that's probably the secret to being a Leica person.
Uh-oh. I'm in trouble. I've been tempted. many times. So you were talking about Harvey Stein. You took workshop from him, and actually that's how I met you, was through Harvey. But he's just a great instructor, great trainer, teacher. And so what did you get out of that?
Harvey is just amazing, and I really think he's the best teacher I've ever studied with, and that a lot of that is just his dedication to the students. I mean, frankly, some of these workshops I've been in, the the instructors just gripe about how hard it is to make a living in photography, and so they have to teach. They're really not, they're not in it for the love of teaching and the love of students. But Harvey's different. I feel like he's just very vested in the success of his students and in sharing all the wisdom that he's accumulated over his career to help you sort of accelerate your own growth. And of course, Harvey's a dedicated like a person as well. So I really just really learned so much from Harvey. One of his things that's been very important to me is just he calls it confrontational collaboration in terms of making portraits, and that's where you just go up to somebody and you start talking to them and ask to make their picture. And I do that so often now, and I never did it before. I wasn't really comfortable. I didn't really know how to do it. But having a chance to watch Harvey do it and see the results that he gets, it's really converted me to that approach. And I think that's probably one of the greatest takeaways of many that I've gotten from working with Harvey and taking several workshops from him. Plus his workshops, he travels to all these great places.
Yeah.
Just by coincidence, he travels to all these places that I want to go. And I've either have been and wanted to go back, or I've always wanted to go. So. I love his, normally I can't stand traveling in groups. I'm a real independent traveler type person, but when Harvey does it, I just tell him, I'll sign me up wherever you're going. I'll be there.
Wow. That's wonderful. Yeah. I had an opportunity to take a course from him back in the fall. I took his photographing people course and learned a lot of the same things. It was a game changer for me. As a result, the matter of fact, he's going to be teaching a master class, master street photography course for us, or really anybody, but through the magazine, through our community, a little bit later this spring. I don't have the dates at the top of my head, but really looking forward to it.
Oh, wow. That should be awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be, because he's just a great teacher. So, yeah, another thing actually related to Harvey is you wrote an article for the magazine a few months ago that was another game changer for me personally. You wrote one about the 21 millimeter lens, which I never really considered getting one that wide until I read your article. And then, of course, I took the class with Harvey, who stressed it as well. Of course, on the Fuji system, that's a 14 millimeter lens, but it's the same focal length, essentially. And so what's the big deal about it? Why do you like it so much?
Like you, I was introduced to the 21 by Harvey. Prior to that, I was just using a 28. That's a pretty standard focal length for a lot of Leica shooters, for Bruce Gilden, of course, for Gary Winogrand, for Alex Webb. They all like the 28. And I was very happy with it, too. But then, Harvey's point, which you learn, as you take the workshop, as you see his photos. So I went in his workshop with a 28. But his point is you can get so much more of the environment, in with the 21. And the other thing that's really critical is it gets you up close. It kind of forces you to go in and, get close to the person and capture a lot of detail, whether it's emotion or, more specifics about this portrait that you're making. And it's, I use it a lot now, particularly in street photography. I used it almost exclusively when I was in India with Harvey a year ago. The 21 has really been an eye opener for me, particularly when you are doing things like street portraits.
Yeah, that was an excellent article. But I'm kind of curious about the other couple articles you wrote during the pandemic, because obviously things have changed a little bit since then. And, surely even now we can't get as close as we used to, but you've taken all these road trips and the articles that you've sent us have made me feel like you're a person who has flourished creatively during the pandemic, which is no easy feat. So how have you done that?
Yeah, for me, the pandemic, I'm sort of a restless person, and I it drives me crazy just to sit inside, sit at home all day, day after day, month after month. So I was looking for ways to get out. And I did sort of see the pandemic as like, well, you know, there's so many things we can't do. What can we do? And obviously being able to be creative and express yourself is even more important when you feel constrained in many other ways. And so I kind of hit on this idea of taking some road trips, you know, driving to remote places, not traveling, you know, just traveling in my car, not traveling on public transportation where you'd be exposed to other people. And I just thought of it as, you know, where can I take a socially distant road trip. In fact, in 3 more days, I'm leaving on another one. I'm going to spend a little time in Arizona and Southern Utah, trying to kind of go to the warm part, because there's a lot of places I'd like to go. It's still a little too cold here in March. And there's another project that I've started during the pandemic, and that's closer to home, and that is just going out to Alcatraz. Alcatraz is, just a mile off the coast here in the city. It's about a 10-minute walk to me, for me to the dock where the boat leaves. Hmm. And, Alcatraz is always out there. Most people in San Francisco, myself included, go there when you have visitors from out of town. But I thought, you know what? I have never really explored it photographically. And during the pandemic, there have been a lot fewer tourists. The Cell Block, which is the main tourist attraction, has been closed, so you could only walk around the outside areas. And it just seemed like such an emblem of like the confinement and the restriction and the temporality that we're all sort of grappling with during these times. So, mm-hmm. So I've really enjoyed that. I guess it's a little bit of a melancholy project, but I've really enjoyed having something very creative to focus on to kind of distract me from all the things that we can't do during these times. Speaking of that project, another thing that I've never done before, but with this project, I'm making the entire project with just one camera and one lens. Mm-hmm. The camera is the M10 monochrome, which is, you know, like a native black and white camera. You can't shoot color with it. And I'm using, has reissued a vintage 28mm lens that it's just f/5.6, you know, incredibly slow, but it's because it's a vintage lens design, so it kind of gives everything a very 1950s sort of look. And I really like the way that the black and white images with this vintage lens, they seem to sort of complement the themes of the project. So that's something new I'm trying, you know, if nothing else. Just try things new. Maybe they work, maybe not.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that camera. Well, first of all, Harvey Stein told me he has one and he doesn't like it. And then I hear other people who just absolutely love it. By the way, I saw a great interview with Ralph Gibson a couple of weeks ago, where he talks about his... probably like the most important photos he's taken over his career. And Leica gave him one of those cameras to try out, and he only shot film. And he took one photo with it, he said, coming out of his doctor's office. And he liked it so much, he hasn't shot film since.
Just that one camera. I'm not surprised. Yeah, yeah. Harvey has, because we've talked about the monochrome, Harvey has the first version, which is an old one.
Oh.
It's only 18 megapixels, and I've heard it doesn't have very great dynamic range. I know a couple of other folks who have those and don't like them either, but I've encouraged Harvey to trade it in on a new one. But, you know, I think he's, at this point, he's got all the gear he wants. He doesn't seem to... But I love it. I feel like the images that come out of it are just, particularly the M10, the newest one, has much expanded dynamic range compared to the previous one, which I think was it the 246? I can't remember. I just think the pictures that it produces are really really beautiful. And I'm not surprised. I love Ralph Gibson, by the way. So I'm going to have to check out that interview.
Oh, you ought to. Yeah, it's. I'll give you a link to it. And I'll put awesome. A link in the show notes since we're talking about it. But yeah, very, yeah, excellent interview. Very, he's quite a guy.
But I would say that monochrome is not for everything. I don't think I would take it to India, you know, places that are intrinsically colorful. But there's just certain projects. And to me, the Alcatraz project really jumped out as being suitable for the monochrome.
Now, can you tweak it in camera, or you just get what you get?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You still get a raw file that you can edit. It's just not color. It's just pure black and white. It's just like black and white film. There's no color potential.
Yeah. But, you know, a lot of, like my Fuji, I can shoot black and white, but I can, you know, I can change the dynamic range, or I can, you know, darken up the blacks or increase the highlights. And I just wonder if you had that kind of control, or it is what it is.
No, you do. You have the full post-production editing possibilities.
Okay. So you can only tweak it in post then.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Hey, I've got a question for you. It's a quote. Actually, this is a quote of yours, or not a quote, but it was in an article, the article you wrote. I'm just going to read it. And it says, "For me, street photography is a window into our shared humanity, an inclusive way of breaking through the existential shell and forging connections with the rest of the world. Without the human element, a street photo, excellent though it may be, is challenged to achieve that goal." You are such a good writer. I mean, I wish I could write like that. Anyway, thank you. Well said.
I'm glad you like that. I was afraid you might edit it out. That I might have gone too far. So I'm
glad. I just like that. And so, why do you say that?
You know, I'm not. There's definitely people, and sometimes Ralph Gibson tends to towards that, but I don't think he's ever crosses the line either. But there's definitely people that prefer more formalism or abstraction, and that's just not my thing. For me, photography is just a way to reach out to people. Ever since childhood, I've been terribly curious about people I don't know and places I haven't been. And photography lets me sort of bridge that gap. And ultimately, you know, make these positive connections. Our world just feels so fragmented and anxious. And I felt that way even before COVID, but after COVID, just like, you know, all the more so. You know, I think it's okay if pictures are a little bit raw and messy. Some people would disagree with that, but I'm comfortable with it. I feel like that's almost like the fingerprints of my humanness on the image, alongside the humanity that I'm trying to capture in the subjects.
Raw and messy. I like that.
That's going to be my tagline for my photos now. Raw and messy.
If you don't like it, that's too bad, because I did it that way on purpose.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Oh, that was on purpose.
I was just going to say, I agree that you're such a good writer and you really have thoughtfully curated your projects. I'm sure it helps having had newspaper editors for parents, but do you have any tips for street photographers who are struggling with balancing the writing aspect of their project with the photos and the curation of their photos when they're putting together a project?
Yeah, they're really such different tasks. I mean, literally to the point of being different sides of your brain. And I can't do them both at once. You know, I just have to sort of tune into one channel or the other. But I think, you know, the first thing, whether you're writing or curating photos, it's just bear in mind your audience. Your audience, you know, ultimately you're bringing this to an audience, and yes, you want to communicate about yourself, but if you don't engage the audience and kind of point them to the stories that you want to tell them, you're not going to really be able to reach them or have a satisfactory outcome. You know, in terms of writing, I think it's just tell your story. So many people get caught up in, you know, stressing out over finding the right words or whatever. But, you know, I always encourage when people ask me, oh, how do I start approach writing something? It's like, first off, just tell your story, just like you would tell it, you know, to your friend, your mom, you know, just write it down and the language that you would normally use. And that will help you think about it. It'll not only get something on paper that you can start working with, but it'll also help you think about how you know what points you really want to make, and you know what's important, what's not important. You need to do that sort of prioritization and cut out the things that are not really central, that are in fact a little bit more just distracting. Mm. You know, the first thing you learn in newspapers is the inverted pyramid, where you put the most important stuff at the top. I think that's a great model for anybody, and you know, any type of writing where you're trying to communicate something. And then in terms of the editing, you know, what are the main points? You know, what's the story you want to tell? And separate out your visually strong pictures. Sometimes the visually strong pictures are not necessarily the ones that you know, have the most emotion for you or the most interesting memories or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think you need to at least understand in a more objective way, these pictures are you know, really visually strong. These other pictures, less strong, but they have a powerful storytelling component. So you know, have that self-awareness, and then try to use that awareness to direct the audience to the experience that you want to provide for them through your you know, your article and as well as your pictures.
Do you have a story in mind before you shoot, and then you shoot photos to kind of help tell that story, or do you shoot the photos and then come up with the story afterwards?
For me, I come up with a story independently. And then I go back through my archive to find photos that support it. Mm. Because I do sort of believe that you know, that story or those whatever point I want to make, that's, you know, it was there all along, and it's kind of surfacing, bubbling up. So for instance, the article about the 21 millimeter lens, and I went back and looked through my 21 millimeter lens pictures. But then as you do that, so there's some back and forth, because then as you do that, you run across pictures that make you think of, you're like, oh, I should also look what I did in this case. I should mention that as well. So there's a lot of back and forth, but I start with the idea for the story, and then start looking for photos that support it, and then feed that back into the article in order to finalize it.
So what kind of story do you plan on telling in Arizona and Utah? Anything in particular you're going to see or do, or you just?
I just go with an open mind. I mean, for me, you know, I really want to go with as few preconceptions as possible, and just see what's out there. You know, I feel like if you approach a photography opportunity with too many preconceptions, then all you're doing is going there trying to find these validating moments that you can take pictures of. Mm-hmm. And you can actually miss what's really going on or what's really interesting and you know, what's of the moment. So I very strongly believe in, trying to stay in the moment and just photograph that. You know, I think photography is all about the, you know, these very ephemeral things, and you don't want to miss those.
Yeah, those are such excellent points. So maybe we can all take that to heart, right? Like, to just take the photos, just be there. Otherwise, you might miss things. And I really liked your point about kind of dividing your images into two categories, being able to realize which ones are strong images visually and which ones you're simply emotionally attached to, which could still have storytelling value. We often tell people who submit to the magazine, maybe you might need a second pair of eyes. Get a trusted friend or someone who does good work to look at your images and give you their opinion if you're having trouble separating yourself. Do you ever do that, or are you able to completely separate yourself from your work when you curate your images?
Yeah, so I can't do it all on my own. I usually make a rough cut, and then I will talk to somebody. Sometimes I'll talk to Harvey Stein. Sometimes I'll just say informally, not this is not an either or, this is an and situation. So I'll talk to some friends. I don't really have a lot of trusted photographer friends, but I like to get people's just sort of raw opinion. It's like, what do you think of that? Or do you like this one or this other one? I also put photos on Instagram just to kind of see what kind of response I get. Sometimes it's helpful. It's certainly not any kind of important judgment, but it helps you gauge a little bit. This has got some more general appeal, or this other one doesn't. So it's I'm very bad. I can't really separate myself emotionally from the pictures. So I definitely need some help and some insight when it comes to making judgments.
Yeah, who can? I mean, it's so hard. Let me ask you this. So how do you define your style?
Wow. I don't know that I have a style. I wish I did. I wish, a style of something. It's funny. In one of the workshops, Harvey put one of my pictures on the, on the screen, and somebody said, I recognize that's your picture because what did she say? It was like, it's colorful. You're up close to people and it has eccentric composition. So I was like, oh, maybe that's my style. And I think, to some extent, definitely not the monochrome pictures are not colorful. But to some extent, I thought that was kind of interesting because I hadn't really thought of it that way. But I do have a kind of a soft spot for eccentric composition. And I do like to get up close to people in a lot of cases, although not 100% of the time. So, I don't have a style. I need a more... Probably I would be more successful as a photographer if I had a more distinctive and recognizable style. But I'm just so curious about things, and I feel like I'm just almost responding to what I see, both sort of visually and emotionally and humanly. And everything is so different. So it's really probably not my strong point to bring a very structured point of view to every photograph before I actually make it.
Yeah, to me, you seem more of a photojournalist than, obviously, you don't do a lot of abstracts and things, but you just seem more of a storyteller, I guess.
I think that's true. And that goes back to my roots. And I sort of see myself as sort of, partly street, partly documentary, a little bit of an intersection of those. Mm-hmm. Not purely living in either world, but definitely, you could call it a bit of a masala of styles.
While we still have some time, I'd like to talk about some of your specific photographs. You may not even be prepared to do that. Your work is on Instagram, and it seems like you're only showing your best work on there. So I'm going to ask about one that you took at Coney Island.
Cool. And that was, of course, a workshop with Harvey, Mr. Coney
that's
Island.
That's what I assume. Yeah, Mr. Coney Island. I'm going to try to make it up there for one when he gets back to it.
Oh, you've got to. Going to Coney, I mean, Harvey knows Coney Island like the back of his hand. So going to Coney Island with him, even if you didn't have a camera, it would be a tragedy not to have a camera. But even if you didn't, it's so amazing just to walk around Coney Island and hear him talk about it.
Yeah. One of the reasons we moved to this part of the country, to the east, is so we can hop on an Amtrak and go someplace rather than drive. So I can take the Amtrak to New York or taken to Philadelphia. Of course, I don't want to get on the train and get sick. So
you can't do it now, but that is one of the wonderful things about the East Coast.
Yeah, it really is. There's a few downsides too. But anyway, so I'm going to ask you about this photo. It's a photograph of a guy with a lot of tattoos on his body. He's an older guy without a shirt. And he's right in front of, is that the Wonder Wheel? Is that what it's called?
The parachute drop.
The parachute drop.
Yeah.
Harvey has in many of his photos. It's an iconic piece of architecture on Coney Island. But so it's a photo of this guy. You took it from low obviously a wide lens. You remember, you know which photo I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. I remember that one. That guy was a hoot.
Yeah, he looks like it.
Yeah, so that was, as I said, in Harvey's Coney Island workshop. And, you know, emboldened by my experiences with both Harvey and Bruce Gilden, I just went up to the guy. And, you know, he was somebody I probably wouldn't have approached in my pre-workshop days, but I went up to him and just said, hey, your tattoos are amazing. Can I make some photos? And I did want to include, because it was Coney Island, I did want to include the parachute drop in the background. So I kind of got low to get that all in. I wanted to get a lot of his tattoos. It's still, I'm not totally satisfied with that. I cut off his elbow. It wasn't quite perfect, but, you know, I thought, what a classic Coney Island character. So that picture was a lot of fun. And the guy was super nice. You know, one of the things you learn when you start approaching people is the people that look the most scary can sometimes be the nicest. And the guy was very friendly and did a number of poses. And this was the one I chose just because I liked the way the parachute drop was included.
Yeah, I think those of us who don't do tattoos feel a little intimidated by people who have them, but they spend a lot of money and time on those things, and they're proud of them.
They are proud of them.
And oftentimes, they're happy to have you photograph them.
It's so true. If you approach them the right way and not, you know, not in a sort of a confrontational way, but just an admiring way, then they, yeah. I think they feel understood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. So, Ashley, you have any particular photos you'd like to discuss?
There's one I really like. It's of an elderly woman in a care home in China. And she has like a crutch behind her.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Portrait. That's a beautiful portrait. Yeah. How'd you get into a care home in China? What were you doing there?
So once again, I've been to China quite a lot on my own, but that was a workshop that Harvey did in 2019. 2 years ago, and he just arranged. He had a great fixer for us who arranged all these amazing places that we were able to go. And this was just it was sort of a small. It was actually a Christian care home, which made it interesting because they were kind of operating not outside the law, but on the fringes mm-hmm. of the law. And they really took in people who who would have been homeless otherwise. And gave them it was very Spartan, but gave them a nice, clean place to live. And this old lady was just so amazing. You could just tell, China's been through so much turmoil in the 20th century, and you could tell she probably had seen a lot of it herself personally, and was still surviving, and now had had found herself in this place with these very nice, caring people who were taking care of her. So I just wanted to capture that moment.
Yeah, it's very beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you so much.
You know, I think it's a great project to photograph older people. Not many
people
do it.
They're so overlooked.
They are overlooked, and I think they're such interesting subjects. There's hardly any pretense, and their eyes just tell the story of their lives. I love to do it.
I'm glad you mentioned that because that's something I wish, that I would like to do more of. Obviously, it's completely impossible during COVID, my mom is elderly and lives in assisted living. And, every time I go there, you just think what a repository of experiences and stories and mm-hmm. Emotions. And it would really be nice to find a way to bring some of that, to a wider audience.
Yeah, I always wished I would have spent more time like recording my parents when they were still around, and just having auto recording of conversation or just tell stories about the family, and we don't have that. Although we got back in the early 90s, we got a video camera like a lot of people did, and my dad was. He had lung cancer, but he got better, and I videoed him during the time when he was feeling better, and I thought, good, I'm going to have him tell me some stories and things with this video, And he didn't tell me much. And then I put it away and I didn't look at it for 30 years.
Wow.
And the video camera didn't work anymore, but I got the tape and I had the guy, I found a guy locally who transcribed them, and I got those videos because I couldn't look at it. I just couldn't look at it. I finally did that. And it just felt so good to sit down and see him again and hear his voice. And I thought, God, I wish I would have done that some more. So you folks who still have your family, do that. You know, sometimes you see too much of them and you don't think of it. I'm sorry, I'm going off on a tangent that is totally unrelated.
No, but you know, that's really interesting because we all are in that situation where it's like your you know, elderly family members like tell the story. It's like you're like, oh no, not that again.
Exactly.
But then when it's gone, that's when you really miss it. So, and I think, you know, to bring it back to photography, that's one of the sort of marvels of photography is its ability to find that moment in time and preserve it forever. With that, at least as long as you look at it, not only do you see it visually, but you it triggers that memory as well. So it's a much richer experience, particularly for the photographer, than just the simple visual image.
Yeah. I've actually taken to writing down some of the stories my grandfather tells me. He lives next door. And, you know, sometimes he'll tell a story more than once, but you sometimes get extra details. And I just think it'll be nice to have later on and could be part of a photographic project as well, you know, just to have those stories written down.
Yeah, you don't have to go out on the
street. Oh, yeah, you need pictures to go with the stories.
Yeah.
You remember, actually, remember Stuart Edwards?
Yes.
Who did the story out of Robert Blomfield. But he also, he's a videographer, and he made some short videos of the cutest little old lady. She must be like 4'9". With this bright red hair, and she's in her 90s, and she was just hilarious. Here was his grandmother.
It was his grandmother, right?
And but it just, you know, just a beautiful, very short film that he did. And you know, I think we should, you know, as visual artists, we should do more of that. I think it's our job to record our families, and you know, maybe they're not going to be award-winning photos on the street of something interesting happening, but
what a treasure like for the family. Yeah.
Like
and Meryl a lot Meisler's of these photos, was, you know, that seem so so normal today, you know, with time, they gain a lot more interest.
They sure do.
And I feel like that's, you know, that's something we all should keep in mind is just these of the in fact, as I get older, the moments that are the most ephemeral are the ones that I think are kind of the most precious, and that, you know, that photography is a great tool for, and it doesn't have to be family members. It can just be anything. I mean, you know, it can be your friend cooking dinner, or it can just be something that you do every day that you do so often that you don't even think about it. But, you know, there's beauty and emotion and storytelling in all of those moments. And it's so wonderful that photography gives us a tool for capturing these sort of infinitesimal fractions of a second and keeping those forever.
Yeah. And that, I feel like that's really at the heart of street photography as a genre too. People going out there and trying to see something beautiful that often gets overlooked. Mm-hmm. So what a better way to practice, especially right now when we're a little bit more confined with those that are close to us.
Yeah. Exactly. Even when they say, put that camera away.
Make a picture of that. Make a picture of them wagging their finger at you.
Well, I have a video of one of those videos I told you about. I took it at Thanksgiving, you know, and my wife, she's preparing Thanksgiving dinner and I'm videoing it. And she looked at me and said, will you put that down and help us out? You know, and I've heard that line so many times. So, over the years. And then
now you have it.
I have it. I have proof of it. And then I had a video of my daughter when she was about 6-7 years old, said the exact same thing to
me. Wow, you really don't give up, do you, Bob?
No, I still do it. Except they're all stills now. Yeah, I did. I started a project photographing older people. I'd go into senior communities and do portraits. I was in a nursing home photographing people. And, then my mother-in-law got Alzheimer's, and I just couldn't do it anymore. And I stopped, and I should have got back to it, and I should have photographed her. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm getting way off track here. So I want to ask you about another photo, one that jumped out at me when you sent it in with your article on the 21 millimeter lens. And I don't know where you took this. It's a guy with like reddish hair and he's in the foreground. And of course, you know, you're using the wide lens. So he's distorted somewhat because he's towards the edge of the frame. He has like, I don't know, like a purple scarf on. But I have no idea where you took it. It doesn't say here in your...
I believe that was in Varanasi in India.
In India, okay. So do you have a story behind this photo?
No, that was just one of these kind of moments where you're walking. Varanasi is a very, the old part of the city has just got these narrow, I don't know if you've been there, but narrow alleys in between these ancient buildings. And so everybody's kind of squashed together and you're very close to folks. And so it's a perfect place for a 21 millimeter lens. So I just got the 21 and sort of zone focused it. And as I was getting, you know, and was shooting things that seemed really interesting and just sort of by the nature of the location, they tended to be up close. And and this guy, most people, when you get that close to them and point a camera, they'll look at you. But this guy seemed to be lost in his own thoughts. And I just thought he had a very interesting, thoughtful expression. And there was a little bit of the city that you could see in the background. And yeah, that to me, that picture is a great example of the type of thing it's hard to capture without a 21.
Yeah. I mean, so when you zone focus with your 21, what aperture do you normally set it at? And what, you'd set it like to 6 feet or?
I usually set it at one meter in the center. And then I'll set the aperture sort of depending. I'd like to set it at, 5.6 or 8, depending on how light it is.
Yeah.
And then the one thing I do float digitally is the ISO on the Leica. So I'll set my my shutter speed and the aperture and then let the camera float the ISO between values that you can input.
And so that's shutter speed, you set it like 1/125th.
Usually a 60th or 125th, depends on the light. I mean, I'd like to have it a little faster, but if there's not much light, I'll, that's for moving. If it's something that's more stationary, I can go as low as a 15th or 30th. But when you're walking, when you're walking, that's a little too slow.
Yeah. Sorry to get geeky on us here, but that's important. You know, it's tricky to zone focus if you don't do it a lot.
Yeah, that's one of the things that you need to sort of build up your experience with. And certainly that was the case for me. Take advantage of that full depth of field and don't just, if you're going to be a meter away from somebody, if you're going to be like, if you're going to be a meter away from somebody, don't set it directly on 1 meter. You try to take advantage of that whole range and figure out where you want your subject to be, within that front to back depth.
And you just know where to be.
Yeah. Or how it usually works for me is I push the shutter when I'm at the point where the subject is where I want him to be in the picture. So within my focal depth, it's like when the subject is the right spot, that's when I push the shutter. Usually I'm looking through the viewfinder, but I never use live view. I just turn that off. First, it eats the battery, but second, I don't even want to. I'll sometimes look at a picture after just to see if I need to, particularly when I could go back and adjust. And so like, did I frame that right? Did I get the light right? But I'm not a live view person. I either use the viewfinder or sometimes I just know roughly where the edges are that the camera are going to be. And if the edges are not absolutely critical, for instance, you're getting up really close to somebody, then I'll just, sometimes just take it.
Yeah.
See what happens.
The 21 gives you a little leeway.
Just call it eccentric composition and be done.
Exactly.
That's why I embrace that tag.
So, well, it looks like we're getting to the end of our time here. Unless Ashley, you have anything else?
You know, I did have a question, and it has slipped my mind right now.
happens to you too, huh?
Yeah. So, I don't know. We'll have to save it for another day.
any thoughts you want to leave us with?
No, thank you. I love your magazine. Thank you for the opportunity to write for you and to chat with you guys. I always love to talk about photography, and honestly, there's not that many people to talk about it with, especially during the pandemic. So this has been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We really enjoyed it too.
Yeah. Tell us where people can see your work.
Yeah. Right now I am literally in the midst of, making my website. So it should be up soon, but, in the meantime, Instagram, @vhines_photos, VHINES_photos, is the place to see me. And when I, launch the website, I'll announce it on Instagram.
Yeah. Send us a link.
I will. I definitely will.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Hopefully get a little more of my work out there than just the Instagram feed.
Yeah. You need your own home. Don't depend on people like Facebook.
Exactly.
You know, Silicon Valley person, you know better.
Yeah. You can't trust these Silicon Valley companies.
Nah, for sure. All right. Well, thanks again. Appreciate your time.
Take care.